I'm Charlie Reid, and I play in the Proclaimers.
And I'm Craig Reid, and I play in the Proclaimers as well.
And I want to get right to the new record, because it's coming pretty fast on the heels of Life With You. But that album, were you surprised? I mean, not that you would be, but that album did really, really well, didn't it?
It did. Certainly, especially in the UK, it got more airplay than previous albums for a number of years, and it did well, and it did better, I think, than we thought it was going to do. And it was great to do it, you know. And we just followed that up with this record. You know, we only finished touring Life With You in July of last year, and we took a couple of weeks off, and then we started writing this album. And this album was written in about 6 months.
What happens with a lot of bands that are not from here is there's, you know, to this day, it's like the Beatles, right? There's a delayed release.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, it came out there in back in July, which isn't that much, but it must be interesting, because you come over here and people are probably still into the material from the last album.
I guess it was good. I mean, it's nice to, I like playing songs to people. I always remember going to see bands when I was a kid, and to play the new song, a good new song, it was like, wow, I never heard that before, you know. And I really like that. So I think the material is good enough that the ones that we've been doing, we're doing a couple more at Soundcheck that we're working in for the British tour. And I think that the quality's as high as anything we've done. So hopefully people dig it, you know.
Love Can Move Mountains is like an anthem. It really is. You know, if you're going to open up a record with being the subjects of your songs, and we're going to get to that in a little while, but if you're just going to get, and then I watched the video, if you're going to do an anthem, this is pretty knock 'em. It's beautiful, but it's also knock people's socks off. So you, when you recorded, did you know that was the opening track?
We thought it would be probably there, you know. I think certainly when we were recording it, I think we believed that would be the kind of lead track on the record. Yeah.
And then you get to track number two, and by the way, you know, the video is one thing, but then I watched the video for Note and Rhymes, and you know, so here we are with Love Can Move Mountains, and you have that couple of seconds of silence, and then boom. You know, it's the second single that obviously we don't have yet, but I mean, you're taking us to a sock hop. So tell me a little bit. This is a great place to talk about that song, but also, you know, you're writing this record, and the one thing about a Proclaimers album that people can and cannot count on is where you're going to take them. You know, they know it's going to be your voices. We'll get to the producers and the sound in a little while. But to go from Love to Moves Mountains to that's kind of you saying, okay, don't put a label on us, right?
I think we do different kinds of songs. I mean, we operate in the field of the 3 minute popular music song. That's what we do. We're into all kinds of them, from show tunes to rock and roll to country music to blues and to folk, and so it all comes out. You know, but that's really what we do. We like doing songs. There's not really a concept behind albums with us. We do good individual songs. So the fun part is when you go and the producer goes, well, let's try this. And sometimes it doesn't work, sometimes it does. And so you get something that sounds like somewhere between Adam and the Ants and Bill Haley or something, I don't know. And that's that, as opposed to something like Love Can Move Mountains, which a very different kind of song. I don't like bands that do the same kind of song all the time. I don't know why they would be satisfied by doing that, you know.
I don't either. And then, speaking of country, it's always so easy to find an unhappy woman. So was there any particular country influence with that? Or did you just say, we're just going to write killer country song?
That's not our song. That was originally done by Mo Bandy in about 1974. And we had it on a best of, and best of for over 20 years now. And it was just a song that we both liked, and we thought, stick that on, you know. Sing All Their Cares Away on the record. That's also a cover. That's by Damien Dempsey, an Irish singer-songwriter, and he toured with us in England about 4 years ago, and he did that song every night. So we thought, so you know, we did. I mean, there was sometimes we put covers on an album, sometimes we don't, but I think both those covers really work, and it kind of adds a bit of texture and a bit of colour to the record.
I think that I Know has to be a single here. I really think that's a powerful song. But it's a classic, in my mind, Proclaimers song, because it's the old trick. And people always, you know, again, everybody tries to put labels like, oh, the Proclaimers, well, they do this, this, and this. And then you hit them with a song like that. And a classic thing for you is beautiful melody with not while religious nuts are willing to spill their guts. So you are probably two of the best I've ever seen at putting opinion and information and politics in a beautiful rapper.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I think it's a great song, and Craig, you know, it's great words, and I think I like that. I like when sometimes the melody says one thing and the words say something else. And again, really good production, not overdone, by Steve Evans, really complimentary to the song. And I like it. I like the fact that we do some social commentary songs. Most of it is relationship songs that we do, but I like social commentary songs, and I think that's a good one.
You went right back to Steve Evans to produce and record, because heck, the relationship worked. It was great. And at Rockfield again, which you cannot go wrong with the reverb there, can you?
No, it's a fantastic place. It's a great studio, and you know, we really enjoyed it when we did the last album there. So we thought, yeah, definitely go back, because it concentrates the mind, being because it's just about a mile outside of Monmouth in South Wales, which is a very small market town, just a few thousand people, beautiful little town. But as I say, it's over a mile from there, and it's in a farm, and it's very quiet, so there isn't really a lot of distraction, you know. So that was it.
Yeah, I could play this record next to "I Hear You Knocking" by Dave Edmonds.
We've got the story on that, because we were he lives on the outskirts of Monmouth, Edmonds, you know, and we were kind of we had six or seven different opinions as to what bar he drank in, because we, you know, would he be nice to walk in and go, because apparently I think he's fairly short and sharp with people if they bug him too much. But it would be nice to go in and go, oh, we sat and there was Dave sitting at the end of the bar, but we were yet to find him. We didn't discover him in any of the pubs.
Maybe your next album could be entitled "The Search for Edmonds."
Right, well, it would have been great. He could have come along and sung some lyrics, you know. But yeah, it was. I mean, we're big fans of Nick Lowe as well, and just, yeah. I mean, there's so much history at that studio. And then the people that ran it, stories about Freddie Mercury playing frisbee on the lawn, and the Gallagher brothers, and the bust ups. I mean, there was a major bust up between them at that place. So there's a lot of history at that place.
It surprises everybody when I go on the air and I say, by the way, this is the Proclaimers, and you may not know this, but they started as a punk band. Can you tell me some of the names of the songs back then?
I can't remember the names of the songs, but the first band we were in was called the Hippie Hasslers. And that was the very first band we were in. That was like 1978, 79. And then we were in a band called Black Flag before the American Black Flag was ever out. But I can't remember the names of the songs. But we used to cover stuff. We covered Clash stuff. We covered Damned, Sex Pistols. And we did our own songs as well. And that's how we learned, you know. We were just in bands, and Charlie was playing guitar and I was playing drums, and that's how we progressed. And eventually we thought we couldn't make any more progress if we were in a band and compromising with other people, so that's why we started the Proclaimers. And as soon as we started the Proclaimers in 1983, because we were just using the one guitar and the two voices and a bit of percussion, the songs had to be much better, and they were instantly much better. And the responses we got right from the beginning, the first two or three gigs, we knew there was something. We absolutely knew.
This was your debut. It amazes me. Was this not your debut at South by Southwest? Was this after all these years? So that must have been pretty awesomely amazing. After all these years.
It was nerve-wracking as well, because we hadn't done any acoustic shows for a long time. And a lot of this time at South by Southwest, you're only going to do 20, 30 minutes, or even 10 minutes, you know. But it was a bit nerve-wracking, and we really, really enjoyed it. And we'd always wanted to do the festival. And times that we talked about doing it, we were in the studio or we were on tour somewhere else, and we just never got round to doing it. But we had a great time, and I think it suited us as well.
And I caught, you know, a couple of the small shows, but then there was this one with Glass Vegas and Primal Scream. Yeah. Now, you talk about an interesting taste of scotch.
It was a good mixture. They're good lads, you know, and the Glass Vegas people are really nice. And we're speaking to Bobby Gillespie before soundcheck and stuff. They're good people. It's good to be on way. It was nice. I liked it. The very, very different kind of Scottish bands, but they all had that common thread. So it was a good evening, I think.
you knew years ago. What bands have finally discovered today is that, you know, selling records is fabulous, but playing live is how you get fans and how you actually eventually sell anything. So does it feel like that many years since you toured with the House Martins, who I'm about to play on my radio show tonight along with you?
It feels like a long time now. Sometimes you sit down and you go, where did the time go? And then other times you go, man, that does feel like a long time ago. Again, great lads. Like when we toured with Bare Naked Ladies 2001, that was a similar kind of thing. They're just really good to people that they work with. They're really cool guys. But we just toured with a this crappy old Japanese made guitar that we had, the acoustics all we had. We didn't have any money, but we were on unemployed, you know, and we're so lucky to get that tour. But every so often I look and I think, yeah, it really was that amount of time ago, and it feels it now, you know.
Pete Wingfield, John Williams, Jerry Rafferty, Chris Kimsey, Mark Wallace, David Ruffy, and my favorite, Edwin Collins, who's everybody's favorite. I don't think my audience realizes the depth of your career. I mean, this laundry list of producers is pretty much insane, you know, when you come right down to it. So tell me just one tale about making a record that would really surprise people.
Edwin was a good one, because Edwin, I loved the way that Edwin made records, and I specifically loved the studio that he used. The reason we ended up using Edwin was because we recorded a couple of cover songs, like Chuck Berry songs, for a movie that was being done, and it was a successful play in Scotland and Britain, and they made a movie called The Slab Boys. So we went down to London, and it was, of all people, Jack Bruce who was doing the production on it. And we went and just cut these tracks quite quickly, but we just loved the studio. We loved Edwin, and we loved the studio. And it used lots of old microphones, lots of old amplifiers, guitars. It just had a great sound and feel. And when we came to do the record, he was the most hands-off guy we ever worked with. But yeah, he's got fantastic ears, and I don't know, just good. I think it's memories. I think that was my favourite record to make because of the memories and the people involved.
Tell me about the comic relief effort, because this song, aside from the fact that you say Proclaimers, and you know what, it's either a blessing or a curse, but in your case, I think it's a blessing.
I think so.
I think it's just, I think that any band, any human being that has something that's so pervasive that the second that their name is said, someone without even a space says, boom, and they say the name of that song, you know, that's where the blessing comes in. It's brought so much joy to people. But I think what's more amazing is that rather than just, you know, riding on the laurels of it, which you obviously haven't because you've made a zillion records since then, you've had great success way beyond that, but you've also, you know, you've brought it to a good cause.
Well, the Comet Relief thing happened because Peter Kay, who made the video, contacted our manager and said, would you like to do it? And it was, of course we were going to do it, you know. We'd been asked by the record company and by other people to re-release that song a number of times through the years, and there was no point, we couldn't see any point to it. But this was the point, and also the fact that Matt Lucas was going to be in it, and Matt's, we know Matt's a massive, insane Proclaimers fan. He's been seen us loads of times, and he kind of knows more about us than we do. And we knew it would be good. It was one, it was a good cause, and two, we knew it would be funny, and it would be quality, and it was. And it was a fantastic experience doing it, and I'm really glad that we did it.
You know, the other thing that it did for me, that song, is it taught me vocabulary. You know, I would say, I'm going to Haver, and people are like, you're going to what? You know,
it's nice to. I mean, it's not just in North America, but it's in England. People go, they don't really know what it is. You know, it seems to be confined mostly to Scotland.
And I've been to Scotland twice, so I've learned to try to discern some of the language.
There's words in use that you don't really hear in other places. And when I was a kid, growing up in a little village in Fife, which was a really strong Scots dialect, you know, most of the ordinary people there. And it was a different kind of thing, you know. It's just a different kind of language, really, in a way. And lots of words, as I say, that you wouldn't hear anywhere, like stour for dust or whatever, you know. You don't really hear anywhere else. So, yeah, it was bilingual, I think, is the word I'm looking for.
And there's a play.
Yeah.
that came out a couple of years ago, Sunshine on Leith, and it's going to be touring again. So, and rumour has we might even get it here.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there was a rumour that it was going to go to Toronto a year or so back, and it's not happened, but it's definitely happened again in Scotland, I think next year. And there is talk of it being made into a movie as well, so, but I don't know if that'll happen. I think it's still got some life in it. It's a play. I'm going to say it's a play because it's a play about two guys coming out of the army and going back to Edinburgh and what happens to them and their families. And it uses about 14 of our songs in it. A lot of them are not really well-known songs, you know, but they fit the storyline of the play. And it works well, you know. It's not one of these kind of cobbled together musical things that there's no real storyline to it, you know. It works as a play and it works as a musical as well.
So I've invented a little thing to fill up the rest of the hour, and it's called a musical sandwich. And it's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between. So I'm gonna.